It's a sad fact that the number of suicides has exploded over the last few decades. Writer Jennifer Hecht has lost two friends to it. Now she's written a philosophical argument against suicide. The book's called Stay. Hecht says Camus, in The Myth of Sisyphus, added a new dimension to the way we think about suicide.
I think that he came to a place where a lot of people had gotten to in the past, but he went just that one step further. You know, he doesn't believe that there's a God that's making meaning. And so the question is, does life have meaning? And do we like life enough to wed ourselves to it?
It's fascinating, isn't it? If he has come to the conclusion that there is no ultimate meaning, that he would go on to say, you have to decide that life is worth living, whether it has meaning or not?
Well, there's a way in which he does see meaning. We even have a line from him in one of his letters to a German friend, which he published in 1943, that said, if nothing had any meaning, you would be right. But there is something that still has a meaning. And by that, he means that life is beautiful, but it's also horrible. And that reconciling that has been the job of many religions and many philosophies. And his idea is to not reconcile it, but to accept it and not try to solve the problem. For him, death is always something to be rebelled against.
He says, in fact, at some point, doesn't he, that the quantity of life is more important than the quality?
Yeah, he's really out there on his own with that one. Philosophy has, from its inception in ancient Greece, been saying that death is nothing to us, that because there's such an expanse of time before and after our lives, we should not worry so much about how long our life lasts, but just to pay attention to it while it's here. And Camus sort of, he says the exact opposite. He says, what doesn't matter is the quality of life. All lives are very difficult. All lives are painful. All lives are struggle. So the value of it is to stay as long as you can and pay attention. That's sort of our one task, is to pay attention.
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because so many people had said you shouldn't commit suicide because it would be an offense against God. And he's focusing it down on a more personal level, isn't he?
Yeah. He's saying something that it's true other secular philosophers have wrestled with, that the church and religion in general, also Judaism and Islam, the church had so vociferously ruled against suicide that it seemed beholden upon secular thinkers to say, I can do whatever I want. I don't believe in God, or I don't believe in a God that would care about this. I'm on my own and I can kill myself if I want. And Camus, like other secular philosophers, many of them, have said, no, there are other reasons to not kill yourself. You know, he's a very dark thinker, but he also sprinkles his books throughout his life with ideas that life is beautiful, that our senses give us something so wonderful. There's one place where he says that life has a smell like a hot, wet stone, just that our senses give us such beauty that we are to somehow bear with the frustration and the pain and the humiliation of being human.
One of the interesting things in contemplating his or any other's writing on suicide is that he considers it a philosophical problem. A lot of us, I think, would see it as a psychological problem.
I think so. Today we rely too much on a theory of disease, that suicide is the sort of inevitable end of a certain level of depression. And that alienates people who are not profoundly depressed, but who feel, who have ideas of death and suicide. Throughout history, we see philosophers and other kinds of writers say, look, a lot of people have these feelings. It's not a sign of madness or disease to have these thoughts and feelings. And here are some of the reasons that we don't follow up on them.
I think part of the reason this matters to so many of us is that it is a very personal thing. In fact, we ought to step back for just a moment. Part of the reason I think that you wrote this book was because it became very personal for you.
Yeah, I'm a poet, and there's been a couple of very painful suicides in the poetry world. And for me, it was two women who, I got my PhD up at Columbia in history, and at the same time, they were getting their PhDs in the English department in poetry, and we knew each other. And one of them took her life in 2007, and then the other one did it in 2009. And that put me in a role of trying to think about what the secular argument against suicide was and coming to believe that having faith in life, having faith in oneself, and crucially, having faith in humanity, the secular philosophical world, really what it requires of us is to recognize that life will often bring you up after it's brought you down, to recognize that the people around you are connected to you. We live in a very individualistic age. This is the first time in history that we have more rooms in the house than people. We want to be able to be alone, but it's also very bad for us to be this alone. And it came to me that if a suicide of someone who I know but who isn't even a deeply close friend at the time can be so painful and so pull the rug out from under people, then that means staying alive when you're tempted to suicide is a gift you give people.
These two friends of yours, the poets, each of whom committed suicide, what, a year or two apart, the way you tell the story suggests that the second of these thought about it deeply, perhaps in part because of the suicide of the first one. And initially, she thought that the first had made a sad decision, and then she did the same thing later. Sometimes it makes you wonder whether you're influenced by others.
Yeah, I'm sure that we're influenced by each other. This decision towards suicide is definitely one that when one person opens the door, it changes people's calculus about how to deal with problems, about how much pain is a reasonable amount to be in to stay alive. The response to suicide through history has been so strong, partially because when you lose someone or even just know someone, that you are much more likely to get in trouble yourself. And likewise, when people bear witness to the amount of pain they're in and yet refused suicide, they're also influencing people in a profound way. And we owe each other gratitude for that.
That actually is one of the things that interests me the most, is this commitment to continuing with life when you don't want to. There is an argument to be made, isn't there, that living has responsibilities beyond yourself.
That's right. But it's not just other people. It's also our future self. You can imagine that if you go back several months or several years and told somebody who is going to eventually kill themselves that that's how they were going to end, they would be very distressed by that. That's because suicide tends to be a short-lived, urgent feeling. We've done studies. We see people who are saved from jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge. The vast majority of them never try again. And not only that, many philosophers and thinkers of all different types, many artists, have suggested through history that pain leads to wisdom. We wish it weren't so, and sometimes it's hard to see how it works. But living through suffering sometimes gives you an extraordinary amount of insight. You can see the world better. You're humbler and therefore are not looking at the world through your ego. And we have to say to the person who is suffering, this isn't for nothing. Religion's always been pretty good with that, of saying that suffering is something that you can offer up to God in a way. Well, suffering is something that you struggle through to know yourself better. And if you can have in your mind already a conceptual barrier to suicide, you can save yourself.
Jennifer Michael Hecht is a poet and the author of Stay, A History of Suicide and the Philosophies Against It.